Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
BT and Sal back on the fan. We'll get back to your calls on Pete Alonso. 888-808-1019. You know what Aaron Glenn said yesterday? He told the Patriots, check yourself. I don't want your interview. And I love this. I love that, BT, because it shows, I think, for two reasons. Number one, and I didn't read or hear anything other than he just declined the interview request from the Patriots, but I would assume it had to do with two things. Number one, he feels like it's just out of necessity to comply with the Rooney Rule.
Yep.
Because it's a foregone conclusion they're going to hire Vrabel, which is good for Glenn. Screw you. Go interview somebody else. I'm going to get a job anywhere. I have other interviews to go to a better spot than I already know. Like, I'm walking into a spot where it's going to be Vrabel's job anyway. Number two, I think because of the way they treated Jerod Mayo, it ticked Glenn off and said, you hire a coach. Like, I would look at organizations that have done that, whether it is Arizona years ago with Wilkes, whether it is the Raiders with Antonio Pierce, whether it is Robert Kraft and the Patriots with Mayo. What they did to Mayo was dirty. Whether you think he's overmatched or not in year one, like, I understand that, but
yeah,
you don't hire a guy and say he's going to be the successor to Belichick and fire him after 1 year. And I would guess that was a part of why Aaron Glenn said thanks, but no thanks, and I respect him for it.
I think that's a pretty good read. I mean, hell, if they do that to a former Patriots champion, what the heck are they going to do to a former Jet?
Yeah.
That right. Ain't really.
Yeah.
Public stoning
right,
if they start 0-4? Right. Jeez.
Why would they even want him to begin with?
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, you nailed it.
Yeah.
To check a box. And this is where, you know, the Rooney Rule in spirit is a beautiful thing. I mean, when they came up with this, it was well-intentioned, and I do think in certain circumstances it certainly worked, and I think it's been truly applied in terms of, like, meaning it's teams use it sometimes the right way. But also, as we know, it's, all right, let's bring in this guy, and all right, now we're good, check, and all right, we can move on and now hire Mike Vrabel. So I respect the hell out of Aaron Glenn not falling for that nonsense. Now, if Aaron Glenn didn't have any other interviews lined up, five teams want Aaron Glenn. So I think the Saints are a real threat for the Jets. Obviously, the Jets, the Patriots wanted him. Aaron Glenn, to me, and this is what sucks about being a minority candidate, right? If you don't have other options, now Aaron does, but say if he didn't, you almost have to take it. And I said this to you yesterday. I said this on the podcast last night. It's out there, by the way, if you guys want to check it out. Spotify, Apple, Unkillable Podcast, the Jets, all Jets stuff. You know, when you are brought into a room and you know you have no chance to get the job, right? That is a very tough room to walk into. And it's unfair, and it's a dog and pony show. It's a charade, and everybody knows it. But why you do it, number one, for those who will come after you, okay, almost like a free agent in terms of getting the most money, I think is a minority candidate. And I think that, not to speak for them, but I think that they have this level of responsibility to the next wave of minority candidates. But the other thing is, when you go in the room, now the guy who's making the decision this time, he doesn't have, you know, there's somebody else in that room who might be the head of scouting or the assistant GM who doesn't have the ultimate juice here, but he might become the general manager of Team X in 3 years, and they might interview you. And they might say, oh, now you do have a chance because I remember you blew us away. We were just predisposed to hiring Vrabel, whatever. I know there's a lot there. But the Rooney Rule, they got to find the way around this. It's just, it's perfect in spirit. It's imperfect in application. Now, Aaron Glenn, he's jumped past Flores for me. He really has.
Wow.
And I'm going to tell you why. I still want Vrabel one, but I know he's not coming.
It's interesting because he's jumped up for me, not to that level, but clearly he's jumped up for you as well, but surpassing Flores.
Yeah. You know, but we mentioned it. We didn't play it. We don't need to play it. I'm sure many of you saw it. The Ryan Fitzpatrick takedown of Flores. Mm-hmm. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's played for 8 or 9 teams. He's one of the most beloved guys in the NFL. And everybody speaks incredibly highly of his character and what he was like as a teammate. All races, all sorts of... Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick is loved by everybody. So you tell me that Ryan Fitzpatrick just has an axe to grind with Flores? I don't want to take every single word from him. And it was a takedown. It was a hit piece. from Fitzpatrick on the podcast as gospel, but I certainly can't dismiss it. So now I look at, okay.
Yeah, but BT, sorry, let me just interrupt there for a second.
A lot here.
So it was like more, he called him a dictator, right? Brian Flores.
It totally changed, you got out of control.
Yeah, two things about that. Maybe that was the case. You think Bill Belichick was a dictator? Was Bill Parcells a dictator?
Yeah, but they're dictators with resumes. I'm not so sure that Bill Belichick was a dictator year one with Cleveland.
But that's To me, you can be a dictator in the NFL and have success. But that's aside. That's just one part of it. Number two, and this is more important. You don't think Flores learned from that and has changed from that?
That's a really good point. I do. I've always said I think smart people learn. And I've always used the example that I was working out in Detroit when this happened. Rick Carlisle got fired. Terrific coach, right? And Hall of Famer. Rick's one of the great offensive minds in the history of the NBA. But when Rick was with the Pistons, remember, they won. He didn't win the championship. That was Larry Brown's team there. He later won with Dallas. But Rick was fired because Rick would walk around the building not being mean, but he didn't have time for small talk. He was just head down and, don't get in my way. And if you get in my way, you're a distraction. If you're a distraction, I can't do my job. And he would become a little tense and whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Make an uncomfortable work environment.
Rick went on TV. Rick kind of learned how to breathe a little bit. Rick became much better around the office. Rick became a superstar. So I do, and Rick is brilliant. I think that smart people do learn, and smart people do adjust. And there is an element of self-awareness that I think Flores could tap into. But Aaron Glenn, that's where I'm getting back to Aaron Glenn here. Like, Aaron Glenn to me, on paper, forget about the fact that he was a former Jet. Yeah, it's cool, but it doesn't mean that much at the end of the day for me. Except he knows the tortured history, whatever. He is, on paper, everything I don't want. He's never coached a team, and he's a defensive guy. All right, so why would I want him? Well, number one, I look at, first of all, how we stifled Sam Darnold in that offense. Brilliant offensive mind, Kevin O'Connell. Like, there's football reasons to like him. They've had so many injuries. That tells me that he's very adaptable, and he could do things on the fly, and he's not just beholden to one scheme or one type of player. That is very important to me. And the other thing, and I was thinking about this last night, this was definitely on the pod, like, all right, I know he's not an offensive guy, but he's part of a building that goes hunting 40 points every week. Like, the Lions aren't there to win 14-10, 13-10, like the Ravens or even Rex's first iteration defense. They are there to blow you out, and they're there to get in the end zone four or five times, and a lot of times they do.
Now, not a ball control, move the chains.
Yeah. I'm not saying that just seeps into his pores and he learns offense. I'm not saying that. That's stupid. What I am saying, though, I think there's some value being part of a culture that looks to shove the ball down your throat. Like, he's aware of it. He's seen it. When he's not coaching his defense, he's watching the offense. And the other thing, too, think about the division he's coached in. Justin Jefferson, you got to try to stop him twice a year. Obviously, Caleb Williams, young, but whatever, he's a young talent. That's a tough, not even forget about him. But Jordan Love, a very talented player. It's not like it's a division that is without any sort of offensive weaponry, and it's a tough division to be a defensive coach in, is what I'm saying. So then you listen to him speak, and I did a deeper dive yesterday. That man is in charge, bro.
He's your number one?
I Vrabel's one.
Okay.
But he's not coming here. I would rather have Aaron Glenn over Flores.
Wow.
I would.
I think he's moved up. I just, like you said, on paper, first time, and I'll even forget the first time, the defensive thing, it would matter then, it'd be imperative who the offensive coordinator would be if it were Aaron Glenn. I still want Pete Carroll, who, by the way, is getting another interview with Vegas.
I saw that.
I mean, what are the Jets doing? They're interviewing everybody. You can't bring in Pete Carroll, for goodness sake. Let's get back to the Pete Alonso calls. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Start of the show with the news of Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso's camp going to the Mets and offering them a 3-year deal with opt-outs. We don't know the financial parameters of that. Andy Martino since reported that it's not close to being done, but these things could happen quickly. But anyway, that's what we're looking at. Alonso's camp with Boris go to the Mets and offer a 3-year deal. Paul is calling, exclusive to the Mets, by the way. Paul is calling from New City, New York. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, that's a new one, exclusive. I've never heard that one before. But I'm wondering, like, when Soto signed back, it's over a month ago. They had said, Stearns had said, we love Pete. He's out there, and go out there, find out what you're worth, and basically come back to us. And there's nothing. I mean, has anybody even made an offer? Has anybody come with a concrete offer for years?
I don't believe so.
It hasn't been reported.
No.
If there is one, it has not been reported.
Right. So then you come, I think.
But it could also be, though, Paul, it could also be because the initial, and sorry to cut you off, and we'll let you continue in a second, but it also could be because the initial go-round with Boris to the teams could have been preposterous. You know, 6 years, whatever it may be, $200 million, we want $175. That was the report at the time. They want six, $175, $200. So now maybe that the initial lowering of the contract, and he could start with the Mets before going elsewhere. Maybe that will take place here.
Yeah, and that's what I think is happening. I think, you know, there was floated about a three-year, $90 million. I don't remember where that originated from, but that was what was floated out there. And now, basically, the Boris, the camp has come, the Alonso camp has come back with basically the same thing with opt-outs. I would give him the opt-outs. I don't see what the problem is with opt-outs, especially if you want to go after Guerrero possibly next year. Let him play this year with a one-year opt-out after the first year, 3 years, whatever, $95, $100 million, whatever it comes out to be, and just let him play.
I'm fine with that, Paul, and thank you for the call. My only negative, BT, we talked about this earlier, with the opt-outs is that I feel like it puts pressure on Pete again, and I don't want him to be in the same spot that he was this past season with all that pressure when he came up small.
Okay, now you've said that a few times, and I don't refute it, but let me just kind of attack it from a different angle. So the way Pete processes pressure is an interesting angle. Do you think that man has ever had more pressure in his life after he dropped a pop-up by the dugout in Milwaukee and then hits a home run off of basically this version of Mariano Rivera?
Right, which is why I don't think it's about pressure in its, you know, on its own in one spot, because he's been proven to be, like, Pete's been a clutch guy throughout the course of his career, maybe not every single year, but, you know, early on in his career, he was hitting big home runs in the postseason this past year, to your point, as clutch a home run as we've ever seen in Milwaukee, saving the season. He's hit big home runs in the postseason, so I don't think it's that he can't handle that type of pressure. Pete, for some reason, with the walk year and that pressure of the entire season and not knowing whether he's going to be back or not.
Yeah.
And maybe some of that is alleviated with the 3 years. So you have the opt-out, but you also have the potential to just stay in the contract and have the 3 year money.
Yeah, but what was the excuse the year before that? When he hit .215, he wasn't going for a contract that year.
Well, I mean,
what was the excuse?
No, it could have been the same thing.
Well, maybe he's just declining.
Yeah. I don't know if he's declining. I mean, look at the numbers he had in the postseason.
Well, I understand that.
No, I know it's a short spurt, but like...
Yeah, but he did not have a good season.
I don't think Pete is as bad as the last two seasons have shown. And by the way, even with those quote-unquote bad seasons, the power is still there.
Yeah, no, I got you. But it's just not there for 5, 6, 7 years at $35, $40 million a year.
Understood.
We all know that.
Understood. But so you don't think then that a part of his down years the last couple years had to do with the contract situation weighing over him?
I'll give you one of the years, but two?
Maybe that's the better way to say it. Not pressure, but the contract situation and unknown future weighing on you. That's a human element thing.
Hey,
like
you and I have stuff like that in our lives, too. I'm not saying that it's not a real thing. Understood.
Right.
But I'll give you last year, but I'm saying 2 years?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you tell me when he hit .217, it's because he was thinking about this moment now?
Well,
a couple of years ago?
Well, the only reason why I would say yes is because that was the year a couple of years ago that he turned down that contract offer and then had to deal with the trade rumors. And then you had people, you know, yelling about the clubhouse and what was going on in there. You know, these guys don't know what they're talking about.
I mean,
saying how the clubhouse wasn't good, putting maybe even more pressure on Pete.
I'll give you credit. Like when you come back with that there is more that does stretch it out potentially. But that at that point, it's like
guys on the radio saying, you know what I mean?
Oh.
Toxic clubhouse.
Listen, there were some shows out there that were just
I mean? Too hard on Pete.
Yeah.
Where do they get this information from? No one knows. Pete is in Wanacue. What's up, Peter?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Long-time listener. I love listening to you guys. I wanted to regress real quick. Example of a great player, never won a championship, maybe Dan Marino. But my call is regarding Pete Alonso. Obviously, as a Mets fan, we love him. I think he loves the Mets. I think it'd be a great fit for him to come back to New York for a couple of reasons. He'd be surrounded by some pretty stunning batters between Lindor and Soto. If Alvarez picks up the pace, I also agree with you guys. 4 years, 120 is more than fair. Now, here's the thing. I know you guys were alluding to the real estate market. The Mets may have their eyes on a bigger house, on a nicer house. And I think that's Vladimir Guerrero.
Oh, a little different neighborhood,
so
huh?
Really,
but you got to rent for another year? I don't want to rent anymore. I want to buy.
You got it. So my question to you is, if we sign him for 3 or 4 years, do you think there's still a possibility we still go after Guerrero and move Pete, I don't know, DH?
That's a great question, and thank you for the call, Peter. I don't, BT. I don't think... You got to get realistic at some point. The Mets have a huge contract, obviously, in Soto. They have a big contract in Lindor. They have Nimmo extended. Even if Pete is a 3 or 4 year deal, it's going to be at a higher AAV. Yeah. Do you now think, on top of that, they're going to go give Vladimir Guerrero Jr., what, 250? What's he going to get?
Oh, he's going to get more than that. They're already over 300 up in Toronto.
Are they
that
really?
Was floated him. Yeah, yeah.
How? He doesn't project well either. I know he's a little bit younger.
Who would you rather have this year, Vlad or Pete?
No, 100% Vlad. I'm all in on Vlad. But I'm just saying, like, you're going to commit that. I'd be curious to see what type of contract
he gets. I mean, I don't know how his body's going to hold up. Well, no, there's questions. He's had some really great years. He's had a couple down years. I'm not saying he's perfect.
So do you think that the Mets would, on top of bringing Pete back for 3 or 4 years at a higher AAV, would be in play for Vlad next year?
Do I think that now? I don't. However, isn't that what the allure of Cohen was supposed to be, going back to when he first bought the team, to be able to do that?
Yeah, but think about how you're going to structure the team.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the argument would say, you lock Vlad up, play him at first, you have Pete DH, and then by the time Pete's done with his 3 or 4 year deal, you then could move either Vlad or Soto to DH and figure that out.
And Sal, at that point, Marte's totally gone. McNeil's deal is gone. You have Alvarez. You have, hopefully by then, Mauricio. You've got Vientos making peanuts. You have only a couple years left on Nimmo. There's ways to do it. Diaz will be gone.
Put it this way. I would, with Cohen, to your point, you guys are right. I would never rule anything out. I wouldn't say it's likely myself, just structuring a team, but I wouldn't rule anything out. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-8. 808-1019. BT and Sal back on the Fan on this Friday, 888-808-1019. Ahead of Wild Card Weekend, we'll have our Perfect Parlay Pick segment later on. Go over all the picks and have some fun discussing Wild Card Weekend. But we are talking Pete Alonso right now with the Mets.
Yeah, I need a little help here, guys. I need a little ruling, Hoff. I'm going to have to pull you in, obviously, Sal. Okay. All right, so listen.
Maybe we get Boyle's idea here, too.
He's young, Patty Boyle. Single. We'll get his thought on this. No doubt. So I don't understand this. And so yesterday I'm at St. John's, and I have to film the Red Storm Report, right?
Yes.
Episode 1, it's going to be on tonight. It's going to be on tomorrow, MSG. Check it out. I've tweeted some stuff out, whatever.
You sent in those pics, dude. The facility looks great.
And they got a new one coming. That's the old facility. They're getting a new one in a few years. Yeah, no, Rick brought some money with him, there's no doubt. And a big one tomorrow night against Villanova at the Garden. It's going to be fun. St. John's is very good this year. But anyway... So now, and I'll do this, there's 10 episodes. I've done this for well over a decade. I love doing it. And I will usually film it on a Wednesday or a Thursday. So obviously I've got to pack a suit, whatever. So, whenever I do it, at the end of it, I have one of the camera people, one of the people I work with, take a picture of me and Rick. I put it out on Instagram. Let us know, hey, we got episode 2 coming up. We got one. All of a sudden, everybody's a fashion critic.
I know where we're going. Yeah.
They're either a fashion critic or, you skip leg day. I mean, everybody chimes in with their idiotic, moronic. And by the way, I got news for you. If there weren't dating apps, you'd get nothing. You got no game. Or you losers who chime in with this. It really doesn't bother me. I just laugh at these pathetic souls. Because then I look at their picture, and they're gross. Right. They're absolutely losers, right? So, anyway.
Like, I did get laid. Before I got married, of course. But I used to have sex.
So I pulled the attire, and I even did it the night before. It's not like I did it in the morning. I just picked something that was sloppy. I got a nice turtleneck and a really, really nice blazer. I'm not going to tell you how I don't wear suits anymore. I've got a couple.
Right.
I got about 5 or 6 really good Italian blazers that are not cheap. Okay. And I'll rotate them out, maybe even 7 at this point. And I mixed in a little turtleneck.
I noticed the turtleneck.
What the hell is the problem with the turtleneck?
Hoff, did you see the pic? Did you send that to us in our group or I saw it on social media?
Yeah, I put it on social media.
Okay, so you might have sent it to the group as well. And it was like, it was a great pic, the facility, you hanging out with Patino.
What's wrong?
I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't notice the turtleneck. And my initial thought was not, oh, that looks bad or anything like that. It was that... BT likes turtlenecks.
I do.
Yeah, you're a big turtleneck guy. I personally am not.
Why?
I Do you
think it's too preppy? Is it not comfortable?
No, it's not comfortable to me. I don't like, it's up around, like I feel claustrophobic.
Like a sausage, like kind of stuffing yourself in there?
Up on my grill like that. And I don't want to, I'm not a turtleneck guy. I don't feel that way,
so that's not an issue for me.
I don't think it looked bad. I think it looked fashionable. Hoff, what'd you think?
Yeah, not a fan. It looks like you're cold.
It was freezing, by the way.
I mean, it's 12 degrees.
Yeah, 37-mile-per-hour winds for the last week. Were we in Kansas with Dorothy?
I like necks. I'm a fan of necks, and I can't see
you. You have a neck fetish, you wacko?
I guess I do, clearly.
Now, before Boyle answers this, I have an idea to where he's going to go because I've seen him dress with the turtleneck. I think Boyle is going to say he liked your look.
Because he knows what's up.
Did you see the pic, Boyle?
I got it pulled up in front of me. I would have picked a different pattern of the blazer.
Look at this guy.
But the turtleneck with the blazer combo is good.
Okay. See, that's fair. I can handle that. And by the way, as I look at it,
different pattern blazer.
I love the jacket, but I didn't love the jacket turtleneck combo. So I will agree with that.
I've done many broadcasts with the blazer turtleneck combo. It's a good
idea. Yeah, but in front of 19 people doing volleyball, nobody sees it. So anyway, so nobody cares.
That's a shot.
I love you, Pat. I'm messing around, kind of. I mean, listen, I don't understand. Like, if it's, and my wife hates it.
I was going to say,
she thinks it looks awful.
So she doesn't have any say in what you wear or help you out in that regard?
Well, no, she definitely helps me out in terms of
meaning, like, picking the outfit. Like,
you should listen to her.
Well, maybe with this I should, right? Yeah. No, she's very good. She got good style.
Well, you picked it out and just were like, and she doesn't like that look.
Yeah, and I ignore it. She's been telling me for 2 years she doesn't like it.
My wife does the same thing. Yeah, I'm with you.
I like it, so I'm going to wear it.
That's what you're wearing or that you don't even match. I'm like, what do you know about fashion? Get out of here.
My wife's got a fashion sense.
I used to have style single in the city. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Come on.
I promise you, if I was single in the city and I went out with that look, I'm doing well.
Don't put us to the test.
Well, I always got to keep going. But I just don't think it's a bad look. I'm sorry. I don't care what anybody says.
Can I ask you a question? Like, say if you're going to a steak dinner, steakhouse.
Yes.
Would you be wearing that?
I would.
What else would you be wearing? Would you wear a hoodie?
You know, Lugie.
That's a good question. It seems unconventional, but now the hoodie's got to be very thin. I've worn some hoodies with my sports jackets and jeans.
Yes, I know that because you both wore hoodies when we went to the Rails, and you both looked ridiculous.
I knew you were going to bring that up, and Lugie, he was giving us crap for that. He goes, you and BT going
to... with his Jersey Shore jeans that are three sizes too small? I can't what Lugie says about style.
His white accessories and ripped jeans.
He's still wearing an earring, that kid?
Yeah, backwards hat every day to work. He was saying...
Because
you guys go to a steakhouse and you let Hoff is the only one who wears a blazer and you guys are wearing hoodies.
Get the hell out of here.
They weren't hoodies. Like, it was a Banana Republic. Mine was a Banana Republic hoodie.
Yeah, mine was some Italian brand. I don't care.
But you wore a hoodie to a steakhouse.
Look good, actually. It was like a maroon cranberry, right?
Yeah, don't you think like that was me kind of dressed up?
Didn't I say to you, would you get that for Christmas? Yeah. I actually liked it.
Right. You said that because I never dressed like that coming here.
Yeah.
But going there, I was like, hey, might as well. He asked me, Hoff's like, what are you going to wear? I go, jeans and probably a nice shirt. Like, I don't really want to wear... I wasn't in shape, but I couldn't wear one of these type hoodies.
No, you can't wear a girl that. It's a great sweatshirt, but not the rails. I mean, like good, but...
And Hoff comes in with the massive blazer that could have been the tablecloth.
Yeah, but I dressed the part. I dressed the part. I'm going to a steakhouse, dude. I dressed the role.
Oh, my God.
I mean, maybe it was...
Dressed professional.
Hey, it's cold. I need a blanket, Hoff. Can I get you a drink? Can I get you a blazer?
BT and Sal.
Honestly, just so the final ruling.
I thought it was fine.
You're okay with
it. It's not my style. It was fine.
I also... Now, maybe this doesn't matter. Maybe not at all. I think if you're taller and bigger, I think it's more acceptable. I don't know. Based on social media,
I'm 4'7". And in reality, I'm only 5'10" anyway, so I'm not the tall type to know that that would be a thing.
And I never forget anything. Last night, I'm watching the Yankee Hot Stove, and my guy Kay is wearing the turtleneck. I said, Jen, look what Kay's wearing. I said, you see?
How do you look? Not as good as you, I'm sure.
Honestly, he looked good.
Really?
It was like a crap. Yeah, it looked good.
You know.
I mean, I'll take my face.
Yeah. Well, what about your body?
I'll take his bank account. I'll take my body for sure.
Yeah, but we're talking about face, body.
No, I'll take mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Over him.
Yeah.
But no, I
think. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, and I'll take that.
I would agree. I'm going with
it. I might take his gigs over my gigs.
You know, all right, let's take a break and come back. Get the show back on track. We'll get back to your Pete Alonso calls. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal, all the fans.
I got a little FanDuel here. Yep, thank you. Thank you. Why don't you tell me a little later there, Patty? Maybe you can tell me what I'm in the bathroom.
See, this is user error here because it's either Dove or Boyle.
Hey,
there's one common denominator, BT.
Everybody's getting lazy around here except me and Sal. at Huff.
BT and Sal back on the fan. Let's get back to the Alonzo calls here, BT. 888-808-1019. We started the show talking about Pete Alonzo and the latest report from Jim Duquette that Alonzo's camp has gone to the Mets and offered them a 3-year deal with opt-outs. We do not know the financial parameters of said deal, but hopefully things could start to now pick up a little bit. Andy Martino said nothing is close right now, but these things can happen quickly. Bottom line is with pitchers and catchers, you know, getting set to report in about a month, whatever it is, a few weeks away here in February, and the Mets clearly needing a power bat in addition to Juan Soto in that lineup. Pete Alonzo needing a home at some point. You would think that a deal is going to get done, but who knows here what eventually happens between the Mets and Alonzo, if anything. But we do know that the market is such that it's a short-term deal right now that is quote-unquote exclusive to the New York Mets. Andrea is calling from Flanders. What's up, Andrea?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey. I think that Pete is not declining. I think that we need to see Pete back in a Mets uniform. You got to get better protection behind him. When Daniel Vogelbach is your DH and a washed-up J.D. Martinez is your DH, he's got no protection. I'd love to see him with Juan, and I think he needs to be in the Met uniform. By the way, my very hot husband owns no turtlenecks, and he would never wear a hoodie underneath a jacket, maybe a quarter zip.
Yeah, there you go, okay, Adrian. Thank you for the call.
What you're saying is that you married a vanilla man, is what you're saying here. Understood.
What you're saying is your very hot husband has
boring.
No style, Andrea. No, to each their own. Whatever you want, sir. I don't care. Yeah, wear whatever you want. Hey, if it were up to me, I'd wear sweats and a hoodie every day.
I know.
Although the jeans now that they make, BT.
Yes, they're almost like sweatpants.
Yeah, like the flexible material. Oh, it's a game changer.
Those are good.
That is a game that's stylish.
Yes.
I got to up my game a little bit with the style. You give up. You get married, you give up. What do I care? Like, it's over for me. You know what I'm saying? Go on TV, it's a different story. Like, for your job, it's a different story. Yeah. But, like, in reality, what's the difference what I wear or look like? I'm more like Adam Sandler. Like, he can wear whatever that. Now, I know he's beyond filthy rich, but, like, he wears whatever he wants. He gets away with it because he's Adam Sandler. Well, I wear whatever I want because I don't care, because what are the repercussions? What, my wife's going to be embarrassed? What do I care?
What if she leaves you because of the way you look?
I don't think that would
and
happen.
And then you're left by yourself, and then you got to get it together fast.
That's somebody else. That's a risk I might be willing to take for the comfort, BT, that I like. No, I mean, if it ever, you know, you'd hope it wouldn't get to that point. But,
no, of course not. I got you. Oh, man. I have a question for you real fast here.
Yeah.
So we talk about the pressure of how Pete handled the pressure a year ago, or did not handle the pressure,
right.
Probably a better way to say
it. Or the contract weighing
the distraction that stuff. I don't mean the moment against Milwaukee or the home runs in the postseason where he played very well. I mean in totality, from start to finish. All right, and maybe even the year before because he turned down the big deal, as you mentioned. I got it. But the fear that I have, and I don't want to make too big a deal out of this, but it's possible. He's got to be distracted now. Because no matter, and he's got a few bucks in the bank as it is, he's looking at life-altering, multi-generational changing money that is about to come his way, right? Right or wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. You tell me what that is. Is that $100
million? Oh, dude, if you, honestly,
I really don't
100%.
Know.
Like, if you had $20 million
right.
And you invested it properly, so, even with, you know, minimal risk, and you're looking to get 7 or 8% back, I don't mean crazy stuff.
Yeah,
I mean.
So if somebody gave you today $10 million,
yep.
Could you retire on that and live the rest of your life?
I wouldn't want to retire because I love doing this. You know, I'd probably do some more coaching as well.
But could you? Could you take care of your family the rest of your life on $10
million. Yeah, okay. Now, I mean, it would really depend on the
lifestyle.
Investments, and then where am I going to live? Would I sell the home that I have now? If I did, what do I get? I mean, there's other variables.
But
I mean,
anyway,
10 is pushing
it. Okay, but 20,
no doubt. No doubt.
So, like, if Alonzo were to only make $20 million or just whatever player, make 1 year $20 million, they should be set for the rest of their life.
Yeah, now, I don't know everybody's family structure. I mean, do you have 9 family members on the payroll?
Okay,
if you don't, do you treat yourself to 9 cars? Do you spend lavishly? I guess my point
is saying that, is it really life-changing money for a guy who's been making, what, 20-something million in arbitration for the last couple of years?
Uh-huh.
He's not going to get much more. Like, obviously, Soto's beyond life-changing. But $100 million, $200 million, whatever it may be.
What's the difference at that point?
Well, no, I think that's a lot. I don't know if going from 20 a year for the last several years or whatever it is.
Yeah, but he didn't make
90.
That. Understood. I agree with that. But he didn't make that the first couple of years. He was making, you know, minimum. I mean, he was making $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, you know, pre-arb. I mean,
right.
So I know what he made last year as an arbitration guy, but, you know, years before that, it was very, either way. And then half taxes and the agency. What's up,
Huff? You had something, Huff?
What you got?
Yeah, it's pretty big. So remember the other day we talked about Deshaun Watson and the Achilles setback? Ruptured his Achilles again.
Yeah, I knew it. I could just tell. Okay, gotcha. Jeez.
So when they found that information, they probably knew that but had to go through further testing?
You have to get the imaging. Yeah, remember I explained the Thompson's test, and even though they know when they squeeze the calf, if there's no reflex.
He ruptured it again?
It's a very, very delicate fusion, if you will. I mean, it's one of the longest tendons in your body.
Does that make you feel like what Rodgers did was even more impressive at his age?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, most people, I don't know the percentage, very few people re-rupture. Now, you might rupture the other Achilles, like, what's the guy's name? What was the Trent Dilfer did that. I believe he had both.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think Larry Bird actually wound up rupturing both Achilles at the end or toward the end. In addition to the back injury, but yeah, like re-rupturing the initial or that's you don't
can they
that
get
very
out?
Much.
Can they get out from that contract now? I mean, I know it was guaranteed, but insurance.
I mean, he's gonna have to present a thorough comeback attempt. That if it's proven that he just physically can't do it, they'll recover most of the money through Lloyd's of London or whatever other insurance policy they have.
And what this should mean definitively, you would think,
quarterback time. Sorry, Giants. Yeah. Yeah, that does change things quite significantly for the Giants. All right. I mean, I'm not stunned because I did think this the other day. Just the way it was presented, it felt pretty ominous, but it sucks.
And I would say, BT, and we'll get back to the Alonzo conversation in a little bit, but we just react to this breaking news about Deshaun Watson with the ruptured Achilles again. So if we agree definitively that Cleveland is going to need a quarterback, the only way the Giants will get one, especially after watching Drew Aller last night, yeah, and now look, with Aller last night, and we could get further into this, and maybe now's the time to do that, BT, I wouldn't react to just one bad game, like, oh, he threw an interception, oh, he can't get drafted. Nonsense. Like, it's one bad game. Now, the advice to stay in school to better himself as a player, to put himself in a position maybe to be the number one pick next year, whatever, I don't know, but I guarantee you if Aller declared eligible for the draft or declared that he was going to enter the draft this year, he would still get selected in the top five, if not the top three, because teams need quarterbacks. They're going to be desperate. They would take a quarterback and have him sit for a year or whatever, get developed. But if you take him out of the equation for a second, it would seem that the only way the Giants are going to get a quarterback would be if Sanders forces his way out of Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, the Aller performance last night was not good. I still love the kid, but he's just too raw. I needed to see him against defense. I'm not saying I wouldn't, like from a Giants perspective or somebody else.
Yeah, no, from a Giants perspective. Or Titans or Browns, if you want to go with any of that.
I don't.
Like Cleveland, maybe the best scenario. Maybe the best scenario for Cleveland is, all right, well, Sanders doesn't want to come, you're fine. If Aller is in the draft, you select him.
I don't know.
You go get a stopgap guy or you have Jameis, whatever, and you let him sit, you know, for a year or two.
Yeah, I mean, that's the team's perspective. What about his perspective? I always try to look at the stuff like, all right, if it's my son, you're going back to Penn State. You're not ready. You know, a wide receiver didn't make not a single catch was made by a Penn State wide receiver last night. Zero.
It was a bad performance.
Zero. I don't even want to overreact to the bad interception, which was a bad one. Wide open, middle of the field, you can't do that.
He's trying to make something happen at the end of the game.
I love him. He's very raw. And if you remember, I told you yesterday, he's 20. So if he were to enter the draft, he would be among the younger players in the NFL, like Allen, running back for the Jets, is 20 this year. It's one thing if you're a running back, another thing if you're a quarterback. And the other thing, too, I would be at this point, maybe not stunned, but very surprised if he goes to the draft. Because think about this, Sal. The NIL, I think I read he was making 1.8, if that sounds right, which is low, I think. But he can easily get, I hope he doesn't transfer. It doesn't seem like he will, but $3 more million to stay at Penn State. So
he's not getting paid.
Yeah, I mean, further
your positioning.
Yeah, maybe get a more stable franchise at the top. Forget about Tennessee. Forget about the Browns.
Enjoy school for another year.
Enjoy school, physically develop. He's raw. He's raw. I want to see him again. I mean, the Irish are, I love their coach, man.
Me too.
I love their, you know what I love about
their
coach?
They're going to get beat up.
They're probably going to get smacked around. They can't score. I love their, and I understand the question. I think it's also been beaten to death here, pertaining to him, not everybody. They always ask him about being the first black coach to go this far. And I get it.
What do you mean, to go this far?
Meaning, to win, like, multiple bowl games and...
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Was not even aware of that.
He's been asked about this several times. He was asked about this at the podium with Franklin. And by the way, I can't stand Franklin. I'm so happy that Notre Dame won.
Really?
Do you see his record against top five, top ten teams?
I mean, I think he's all right.
He wins until you play somebody good. Then he always loses. His record is
awful. Well, I mean, the quarterback play last night, you know.
Well, recruit better receivers. Okay. Anyway, they always ask the Notre Dame coach, you know, about race, and he always says, and he's part Asian and part African American.
Okay.
And his answer is just always amazing. It's awesome. He gets it. He's like, yeah, it's great. He said, but you know, I it's not just about, you know, a black or Asian or white. He's like, I just want the best person who works hard to have a chance to get the job. Like, they're always trying to bring them. ESPN does this all the time. They're always trying to bring race into it. Enough.
Just let him be.
The man's merit is so apparent. He's a rock star.
Yeah.
You know, they always try to drag it into that.
You could see his demeanor.
God.
The way he even answers the sideline questions, the demeanor on the sideline, obviously the results of his coaching.
Best. Yeah. By the way, 1-15, I've been told by Hoff. Franklin's record against top five?
Yeah.
1-15.
Where was he? Remind me, where was he before Penn State again?
Vanderbilt. He was at Vandy.
And he built them up and had success with them.
Yeah, he was very desired.
How long has he been at Penn State?
He's been at Penn State a minute. I would have to guess at least 12 years.
You know, watching that game last night.
You're an Irish fan, like 10, 12 years, right? At least.
Since 2014.
Yeah, okay, so 10 years.
So 10 years.
Watching that game last night, I started to get like the old school feels of my love for college football.
Me too.
Started to come back a little bit. I'm like, man, this is such a great sport, and I do miss it.
Yeah.
Now, it is convoluted with all the teams moving all over the place, the stupid NILs, the transfers, all those different things that you kind of have to ignore. But just pound for pound, watching these kids play the game.
Good atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmospheres are second to none.
That was good atmosphere last night.
Oh, man, Notre Dame being good again.
Notre Dame, Penn State.
And I forgot. I forgot that Notre Dame was in the championship game as recently as 2013.
Oh, yeah, that was with
Manti Te'o.
Who was the coach then?
They got squashed by Bama. They got absolutely rocked. Alabama destroyed
Who was the head coach then? I remember the days of, you know, Weiss. And
I'm pretty sure it was Brian Kelly at the time. And Charlie Weiss never got anywhere
near. I don't think that was Kelly. I didn't think it was Kelly.
But they got... Me neither.
It wasn't Winningham. All sorts of names are flying through my head now.
But they got squashed in that game.
They got
wrecked. It was Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly was there
12 years. Before him, it was that loser Charlie Weiss.
Hey, come on, Charlie.
I like Charlie Weiss. But I remember those days, that's how far back I would go, where Weiss was taking over Notre Dame and USC, those battles that they would have.
Yeah, for sure. Remember Leinart, the push?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, that was sick.
Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
Anyway, BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll come back, get down with the King topic of the day. It is Pete Alonso, and we'll get to your calls as well. I know you've been hanging on. We'll get to you guys. Hang in there. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the Fan.